Support for Art Talks comes from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com. And from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from Red Band Coffee Company, local roaster, offering individually prepared coffees, New Orleans-style iced coffee, and whole bean coffee at two locations in Davenport. Information is at redbandcoffee.com.
Well, hello and welcome. You've tuned into a conversation between artists. For the next hour, we'll be exploring the mind and the creativity of our guest. This is Art Talks, and I'm your host, Bruce Carter. Well, hello again and welcome. Rowan Schussheim Anderson is our guest today. She's a fiber artist and an art professor here at Augustana College. She's been here over 30 years. Marvelous, marvelous work. She has an MFA from Arizona State and a BFA from the Rochester Institute of Technology, their School for American Craftsmen. Grew up on the East Coast. She's featured beautifully in two pieces at the current Local Threads Innovators and Legends show on the fourth and third floor of the Figgy, which will be up until September 7th. Just a glorious piece of purple. I love her work very much. And Rowan Schussheim Anderson, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to see you, Bruce.
Nice to see you, too. This is your fourth time on the show.
And, something like that.
Something every couple of years we have to drag you on.
I'm not sure, but it's been a few times, yeah.
Oh, no. But, I think you're one of the most marvelous artists that I've seen, and especially in the area here. Your fiber arts, they're abstract, they're real, they're evocative, they talk about culture, they go back in time, they're beautifully crafted, the colors are gorgeous, and the work, I think your work is very beautiful.
Thank you.
And I notice the line dance every time I go through the Bettendorf Library. And you brought in a few pieces with you here, these little collages of texture and fabric and color, just great. How did that start for you? How did you get involved with all of these colors and threads and textures?
Very much at the beginning of getting involved with art, I was one of those kids who always liked to make things, always wanted to draw, took art classes after school on Monday afternoons in the school cafeteria with Mrs. Lichtenstein, favorite art teacher. And then in high school, my high school art teacher brought in a loom. Well, I've got to back up. Before he brought in a loom, I signed up to take a jewelry class at what was then Philadelphia College of Art. Now it's called University of the Arts. And when I got to the class was full. And they had another class they were opening. It was macrame. Macrame, for younger people who don't know, it's kind of fun knotting technique out of fiber. So I was already there, and I had my mom's permission to come on Saturday morning. So I said, okay, I'll take macrame. And so I started making these macrame belts and macrame chokers and macrame everything and macrame wall hangings. And I was kind of the macrame person of our high school. And then my high school art teacher brought in a loom and he said, you're going to love this. And the thing is, the unfun part about weaving is setting up the loom, cutting the thread, threading the loom. This loom that he brought in, it was already threaded. So score. I sat down at that loom and I loved it. And I was 18, and I have been weaving ever since. After that, I looked for a college. I was already planning to do art in college, but I wasn't sure. Sculpture, I liked jewelry. I liked clay a little bit. And then after I sat down at that loom, I thought, I got to keep doing this. And so that's been a long time for me.
Gosh. And then you went to this specific school for for weaving.
Yeah. I thought that I was going to do some weaving and some ceramics, but it turned out that whatever you did, that's what you did. So I didn't really major in art. I majored in fiber and textile. It was called weaving and textile design. And the thing that was really interesting was that it was such a serious school that we had our liberal arts classes from 8 to 9 a.m. and 12 to 1 and 4 to 5. And then we had our studio classes every day from 9 to 11 and 1 to 4. So as not to so the liberal arts were spread out and scheduled so as not to interrupt studio time.
Nice.
So this
nice.
Was really like being like at a trade school, like an apprentice.
Well, it's like being at an art school.
Yeah. Well, yes, a very serious art school.
A very serious art school. Yeah. And the Rochester Institute of Technology, that's a very serious area up there for arts and crafts.
It's more known for photography, but the School for American Craftsmen, which is now called the School for American Crafts. Oh. So they've updated their name, but it's still the same idea. And they have glass and, you know, fiber and metals and clay. Hmm.
Did you have life drawing up there?
We did. That was Monday morning from 9 to 12.
Ooh.
Yep.
And design and 3D design.
2D was all day Friday, and 3D was, yeah, we had a lot of all that.
Oh, everything. That's great. Gosh, so you got a really good grounding in the arts. Did you read very much? I mean, did you read Hemingway or Faulkner?
We did, because we had humanities courses. I didn't take a lot of math, I'm not going to lie.
Lucky.
But we had language, and we had the literature and humanities, Western Civ. Yeah, we had all that. We had art history and slide IDs and, you know, the same kind of rigorous program that's still going on. But
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. You came out really strong in that then. So then did you take time off before you went off to grad school?
I did. I wasn't really planning to go to grad school.
Really?
I was planning to be a self-supporting artist. But after a couple of years of making art and waiting tables and teaching a little bit here and there. I taught some good places. I taught at the Smithsonian. I taught at an alternative high school. But the fact remained that I realized that I really love teaching besides making art. And I also thought that it'd be nice to have a more definite income.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I went back to graduate school.
Nice. And how did you pick Arizona? So far away.
I went to Arizona. Well, that was part of it. I wanted something really different.
Southwest?
Mm-hmm. The influence of the beauty of the Southwest. And I was also looking in California. But there was a wonderful woman teaching weaving there named Janet Taylor. She's still an artist today, still making art. And once I realized that she was in Arizona, I really wanted to study with her. And then they gave me a really nice
deal
with teaching and TA and that whole thing, better than the California schools were able to come up with. So Arizona it was.
Huh. How interesting that from the very start, that one little turn just directed you off.
You just never know, do you?
You never know what the door is going to be or who's going to open it. Rowan, your classmate, well, your teaching mate here, Megan, talked about seeing a guy on the street with a potter's wheel making a wheel, wheel thrown, and that ding, that turned her whole life. Right. And it's like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
It is interesting.
It is. So then you came here. I remember when you arrived in the early 80s.
I came in the early 80s to teach. I thought I'd be here for a little while, and it's been kind of a long little while, but it's been great. It's a fascinating. Well, the thing that I've loved besides being in the Midwest and having a whole different kind of geography to look at and the people here easy to like, is that, you know, being in Augustana has really let me expand the fiber program and travel with students. And that's been pretty fun to travel with students and go to Chicago and check out the art in Chicago a lot. So it's worked out very well for me.
And go to Africa and go
to
South
Africa.
America.
Why not? Go to throw in some Brazil, right?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So in 1985, when I was newly here, I went to Latin America for the first time with other Augustana faculty and about 70 students, I think we took. And then I didn't go back with students for a while because I had young children of my own. But when they were older, I started to go back, and I've been to Latin America, I think four times, I think, with Augustana students. And then I helped start Augustana's Africa term in 2006. So I've now been to Africa. I'm about to go for my third time in the spring, take a group of students.
What do you do when you go?
Oh, wow. It's Africa's like just the most amazing experience for an artist. The colors, the patterns, they do not disappoint.
Ooh.
It's like I went to a market there in Burkina Faso in West Africa, And it was like a kaleidoscope on steroids. I mean, it was like just a virtual and visual feast for the eyes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And these people live in this every day. It's just customary for
them. And, you know, the village itself might be all tan and earth color, and their skin is earth color, beautiful, darker color. And then the beauty of that against the color of the tie-dye and the beads, and it's just pop. It's just, it's something. It's a privilege to get to go and see that.
You take a lot of photographs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you use that in your work? Does that come in? Really?
Totally.
Directly in?
Oh, in fact, one of the pieces that's at the Figge right now that's called Thursday Market, the design itself came from printing out some of my photographs that I took, cutting them into parts and making a collage and putting it back together. Because I was trying to get the feeling of the market, and it was really directly from my own photographs that I was designing. And other times it's not that. Sometimes it's getting the feeling of something, the energy, the movement, the
essence.
Yeah, the essence. Thank you. But other times it's really like, wow, that was so beautiful. I want to capture that.
If you want to see what Rowan is talking about, go to tapestryart.com, tapestry, T-A-P-E-S-T-R-Y, no space, A-R-T, .com, and you can follow along. Marvelous. Nice little website.
Thank you.
Yeah.
One of my students helped me do it. Former students helped me do it.
Yeah, it's like whenever you want some technology done, you always look to the younger generation.
Yeah.
It's like, here, do my phone, would you?
Totally. Can't fix this till my children show up.
Speaking with Rowan Schussheim-Anderson, a fiber artist and a professor here at Augustana. So you go into Africa not only to show the students and the culture. Do they work? Do they work in a hospital?
Right.
Well,
it's a good question. The next program that we have coming up, we're going this spring, the students will all have internships. So they will work either in a hospital, at an elementary school, in a museum. What we will do is match their interests and career goals with the internship possibilities, and there's a lot of them. And while they're in the internships, they'll also be in homestays. So they'll be living with families for 6 weeks.
Wow. And language?
The great thing about going to Ghana is that the official language is English. So even though they speak Twi and Fanti and other languages, we don't have to learn those. We can be lazy Americans. And anyone who's been to school has learned English. And some of the other countries speak French, but we're going to mostly be in Ghana. And so the students have that experience. But then when we travel, which is on the weekends, we'll go to a village where perhaps it's a bead village, and we'll sit down on the ground and check out the beads. We go to a bead village also where we learn how to make beads with the artists there. They have the most amazing low overhead bead making, where they collect Coca-Cola bottles, wine bottles, and they pulverize them. And then they use the powder. They smash it to dust. And then they use the powder and they pour it into these little molds and put a stick in the middle for a bead, for the hole in the bead, and then they put them in the fire and they make beads. So we'll go there and everyone will learn how to make beads. And
gosh, that's great. Yeah. How do they color the
it's like a glaze that they paint on the outside of it, and then they refire it so it melts into the glass. So that's another village we'll visit is where they do fabric printing technique called Adinkra. Adinkra means farewell. It was originally a farewell cloth having to do with funerals. And we'll go to that village and we'll sit down on the ground with the artisans, and they will teach us how to make the fabric, how to carve the gourd, and then how to apply the ink and stamp the fabric, and the meaning behind some of the symbols that they use. There's a lot of symbolism, which is really quite fascinating. And so, I mean, it doesn't get any more real than sitting down on the ground next to someone who's covered with ink, because that's what he does every day, 24/7, to produce fabric, to pay his bills for his livelihood.
Gosh, how great. And this is the way it started, too. This is the way it actually worked.
It's true.
Gosh, do you come across any basket people?
Yeah, wonderful baskets. We've gotten to know some basket makers in Latin America more than in Africa, just because of where we happen to be situated. So our students did learn how to do some basket making in Ecuador and Brazil. We haven't really found artisans to teach us in Ghana, but I mean, definitely it's there. We just haven't quite done that. But they're beautiful baskets.
I remember the last time you were on, a number of years ago, you mentioned a startling thing, that you had a book with you on fiber arts, and you were in Africa, and there was a photograph of a certain person's work, and you showed that person their work in the book.
Yeah, the book is called the Encyclopedia of Adinkra. Adinkra is a kind of fabric. I think it's the Encyclopedia of Adinkra, but something like that. At any rate, the point is that I told one of the artisans there that I was familiar with what some of the symbols meant. He said, "How do you know our symbols?" And I said, "Oh, it's called the Adinkra Dictionary. That's it." And I said, "Well, I have the Adinkra Dictionary." And he says, "You have the Adinkra Dictionary?" And I said, "Yes." And he says, "I've been trying to get my hands on that book." And I'm thinking, there's something wrong with this picture, because this book is about you, and this is you and your village, and I have the book. I said, "What do you mean you can't get the book?" And he said, "I've been trying to get my hands on the book." And I said, "Well, I'll send you the book."
Mm.
And I had the book from the School of the Art Institute bookstore in Chicago, the Art Institute bookstore. So I sent him the book, and sure enough, he now has his hands on the book.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, how
the
fun.
The Adinkra Dictionary.
Huh. Mm-hmm. And that's the dictionary of all the symbols.
Right, what everything means. They mean things like fear nothing except God. They mean things like marriage is good, be kind to each other. Some of them are long proverbs, and others are like change is forever and embrace it. And others are a whole story. So,
and these are just the symbols of squares and triangles and circles.
All different, yes. Exactly.
How do those meanings evolve? How do those forms, those geometric forms?
Well, it's interesting. Like the one for change looks like a ladder, which kind of makes sense.
Huh.
The one for some of the symbols, I'm not really sure how it was decided that this one means love each other. You know, although there is a heart one in there, but they designed one for us. They saw our logo for Augustana, and they made one with that, with our arched A.
Uh-huh.
So they made us they invented a new one. Usually, new ones are invented when the king, the Ashanti king, is called the Ashantahene. When the Ashantahene wants a new symbol for a special ceremony, that's usually when they invent one.
Huh.
But they thought Augustana should have it.
Oh,
so they made our A, and we stamped
great.
It. Yeah,
oh, that's great.
It was great.
Huh. So who makes up the new symbol? Is it like the person who names the constellations?
I don't think there's like a particular panel or charge, but if someone has an idea, they can come up with it. And there's a carver in the village who does all the carving. There's someone else who's in charge of dyeing. There's someone else who's in charge of stamping the prints on the fabric. So everyone has, and there's someone else who sews the strips of fabric together to make a larger piece.
Hmm.
So everyone has their own job to do.
Hmm.
So that's really interesting.
How interesting. And this works on the barter system, or this everybody gets paid the same? Or?
I think they get paid when they sell some fabrics. But in the case that we had them teach us, then Peter the carver got a little bit of money from when we paid them for our students coming for the day. And David the printer, everyone got, you know, it was just kind of according to everyone who helped, they all got some payment.
Yeah, we're rich Americans. We tip everybody. Yeah,
isn't that true? But they deserved it. They worked really hard.
Oh, how very interesting. Did you ever wish that you could be one of these people in one of these villages making these things?
I wish I could stay longer. I don't know if I'm hardy enough to actually live there. It's a harder life than here.
It is. It is. Yeah. Yeah, very well said. Rowan Schussheim Anderson is with us, a fiber artist, a marvelous work. Her work is at the Local Threads. I think that's on the third floor of the Figge until September 7th. Nice show, those two fabric shows. Let's take a short break right now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
On exhibit around the WVIK listening area. In the Canage Gallery in the Galvin Fine Arts Center on the St. Ambrose University campus in Davenport through September 5th, the 10th annual Canage exhibition. This year's theme, Home. Hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. At the Figge Art Museum on West 2nd Street in Davenport through September 7th, Innovators and Legends, Generations in Textiles and Fiber. Also through September 7th, Local Threads. Through September 14th, From Pencil to Printed Page, Arthur Geisert's Thunderstorm. Through November 2nd, two Americans in Paris, Stuart Davis and Grant Wood. And through April, A Legacy for Iowa. Hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursdays. At Midcoast at Center Station on River Drive in Moline through the end of September, drawings by Ann Kaufman and mixed media works by Isaias Mejia. Hours are 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday. At Midcoast Gallery West on 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August, photography by Heidi Brandt and acrylics by Leanne Westcott. Hours are 11:30 to 5:30 Wednesday through Saturday. At the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in Davenport, through the end of August, Oils by Stuart Roddy. Hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 11 to 6. At Quad City Arts Gallery at 1715 2nd Avenue in Rock Island through August 29th, Hang 10, acrylic paintings by Jacqueline Garlock and sculpture by Dean Kugler. Hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Saturday 11 to 5. At Quad City Arts at the airport in the Moline International Airport through the end of August, paintings by Roy Kasich and wood carvings by Bill Wolford. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
Back on Art Talks, Rowan Schussheim-Anderson is with us. She's an art professor here at Augustana in charge of the fiber department, the fiber artists, MFA out of Arizona State and a BFA out of the Rochester Institute of Technology, the School for American Craftsmen. Gosh, that just sounds so School for American Craftsmen.
It's like, it sounds better than an Institute of Technology for art, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
Institute
does.
Of Technology, that just sounds so serious.
And then Rowan has a tapestryart.com, tapestry, one word, art.com. You can follow along with our work. Rowan, how do you work? What is your process? Take us through your studio and your threads and your collection of colors. And how does a piece go?
Well, I have a studio in my house, a bedroom in my house that has one wall full of yarn, all different colors, kind of arranged like the color wheel, from blue to purple to red to orange to yellow and so on. And it's just stuffed with all different materials of yarn. I mean to say, like wool and silk and cotton and linen, so that there's different textures. And that's part of what I love, is combining textures. And one reason that I've added beadwork is because the bead has a sheen to it, a real contrast to the fiber. I've also been including some fused glass in the last 5 or 8 years. First, I would buy some glass pieces, but I've been learning how to do fused glass, and I really love it, actually. So I start with a sketch or an idea. Sometimes I sketch and sketch and sketch before I come up with what I'm going to do next. It's not just like sit down and design the next tapestry, but sometimes it comes easily and quickly, and other times it does not. And I try to get that across to my students. You know, you can't always just sit down and come up with the next thing. Sometimes you need to go through a series of things that you maybe even just throw away. Not everything becomes a finished piece. But the last at least five years, I've kind of had two different influences, main influences. And one is the fact that I've been lucky enough to travel to some pretty exotic places like Brazil and Africa. And so the color, the pattern, the aesthetic has been infiltrating my design from those experiences. And I've also been very excited about, inspired by some organic structures, birds, feathers, a lot with butterflies, a lot of looking at the fact that you have a grid, but it's an organic grid. And how can I turn that into some kind of a new, fresh statement? I feel like when you make art, you should have something new to say. And I try not to I don't tend to work in a series. I try not to kind of copy myself because I already said it. If I did that and I don't say it in a different way, what's the point? So each piece is not, usually there's a pretty big step between one piece and the next. Maybe there's some that are related, but then before too long, I want to try something different. And it might be partly because each tapestry takes a really long time. So by the time I'm done with it, it's like, okay, time to try something totally new, see what I can learn from something else. One of my professors once told me that if you were completely satisfied with your work when you finished something, what would be the point? Because why would you do the next piece? And I think there's something to that. Each piece that you do, I think, makes you come up with some ideas, some inspiration, some questions for the next piece, be it colors, textures, whatever. So once I come up with an idea of a design, a sketch, which might be done by drawing, it might be a collage, it might be using some photographs that I took of a butterfly or a bird or a fish in an aquarium or of a market in West Africa. Then once I come up with my idea, then I have to enlarge the sketch so that I can use it as the guide on my loom. And the enlarged sketch in weaver terms is called a cartoon. And then I have to cut the warp, which is a process where you measure out all the threads. And then you have to thread the loom. And it's called dressing the loom, actually. And then the structure that you work upon is called the warp. So the warp is ready to go. And then you cut your yarn and wind your shuttles to do the yarn that goes at right angles. And that's called the weft. So you have warp and weft. They used to say warp and woof. But now they say warp and weft. I don't know why. But I always say that the woof got weft out. But anyway, we have so, and then you sit down and it's kind of like paint by number. You have that cartoon pinned behind the warp and you weave in each section of color according to what the sketch looks like.
Golly.
And I weave backwards. So I'm weaving from the back because then you don't have to tuck in all your ends. So it's enlarged and backwards. It's a little crazy.
Gosh, it's almost like printmaking and sculpture at the same time.
Kind of, yeah.
Wow. So how many pieces a year do you make?
Well, that's a good question. It really depends if I'm doing a very large project or if I'm doing a series of some smaller investigations. And I don't work all solidly during the school year when I'm busy with teaching. So I'm going to say like five or six. Probably four is more accurate than six.
That's it?
Yeah, but then I do some little ones like the one I brought to show you today. So the little ones might make it up to 8 or 10.
Huh.
But four to six large pieces.
Golly. And commissions, too.
If someone wants to commission something, sure. Do you need something for your dining room?
Oh, I would love to have any one of your pieces. You can give me one anytime.
Oh, I thought you were going to commission something.
Oh, gosh, I wish I would. So the piece, say, at the Bettendorf Library, that's right by the gate where you walk in.
Right.
What's the story with that one, Line Dance?
Line Dance came about because the Bettendorf Library was renovating. They're renovating again now, but this was in 1999, I believe. They did a huge renovation. And the then director, Faye Clow, wanted me to do something that brought together some of the different colors in the library, which was easy because there were so many colors, I just chose the ones I liked. And then the library card had a beautiful shape on it, which was supposed to be pages turning. So I took that shape that was showing up in the logo on the library card, and I took the logo apart and took the shapes apart and played with them and put them back together in a different way. So that was my the title Line Dance has to do with pages turning and lines in a book versus technology.
Oh, nice. And now, of course, you're checking out electronically.
Yeah, right. How did that happen?
Yeah, and all the lines.
And my piece used to be behind where they checked out the books, but it got replaced by a big screen and moved, but it's in a good place again.
It is. It's in a good spot now. Yeah. And the logo is right. Next to it.
But it's funny because it was replaced by technology.
That's right. That's right. A big screen behind it.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they saved it.
But it's still there.
Yeah, and I understand the card catalog. There is a card catalog up on the second floor that they still keep.
That must just be kind of an antique to show that this is where it all came from.
One of my work-study jobs when I was in college was to file away cards in the card catalog.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating because it's the serendipity of finding these incredible books on things you've never heard of before, just coming across them. So you have the studio. You have four or five pieces, large pieces that you work on a year, eight or nine smaller pieces, like a foot by 2 foot, 2 foot by 3 foot pieces. You have some pieces at the Figge behind the counter of the gift center.
There's some of my work is on display in the store right now in conjunction with the exhibit. Uh-huh. And some of those are smaller pieces.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's funny, but some of the smaller pieces I do when I'm traveling. I have a little loom the size of a picture frame. It's about 8 by 10 inches. It fits in my backpack when I travel.
And it just closes up?
Yeah, and I take it out like on airplanes and people say, what are you doing? And so some of those little pieces started out because if I'm going to be on the road with Augustana students for 10 weeks, I have some time in hotels and airports and I like to keep doing my art. So
very good.
And I've done beadwork, but people don't like it so much if you take out your beads and a really sharp needle in an airplane.
Oh, right.
They get a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I found that that's not, and if you spill your beads on the airplane, that's kind of, you know, that's not a good thing.
Huh.
So I've stopped doing beadwork on airplanes.
Huh. Interesting. But you carry the stuff along with you.
It's very light. And so then I'm usually working either a small piece or in sections.
Oh, sections.
Uh-huh.
You work in sections. You know where the sections are going to go?
Usually. Like, it could become like a grid. So different pieces get put together later.
And you know where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an idea in your mind of what the picture, of what the image is going to look like?
Yes. Usually that starts from a sketch, too.
Huh.
There's a piece I did of all different close-ups of butterfly wings that was all done in sections. It's called Butterfly Effect, this one.
Oh, the Butterfly Effect from the movie and the book. Oh, and nice.
Different sections were woven on a small loom, and then later when I got home, I put the grid together to create the whole.
Interesting. Squares repeating themselves, different collages of butterfly wings, almost looking like a tiger skin.
Right.
The stripes of a tiger. Superimposed with other different colors going through in a random, slightly African pattern of tone.
With this concept, you have to plan ahead or you're going to have a mishmash later.
Right.
Like quilts. Quilts are really very carefully planned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same idea as a quilt, but I can work on these pieces and sections with a small loom and then I'll put it together later.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
So, and your sketch, although you're working abstract, so it's not like you're drawing something, but you're doing the forms, the play of forms coming through.
It's abstract, but there's still a plan. You know, like people think, oh, crazy artists. But most artists are pretty organized and have an idea. If maybe not always. Usually my pieces that I don't really know what they're going to look like when I start are harder to do than the ones that I have a definite sketch.
Oh, yeah, you have to have an idea.
Yeah.
You have to have at least some idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you feel like you're lost.
You're just kind of wandering through the jungle.
Doodling.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So that you always start with an idea. Where do your ideas for forms come from? They come from your travels, from your experience?
Right.
Do they come out of the air, come out of news,
sometimes,
come out of music?
Sometimes a feeling or a trying to get the feeling of something. But for me, it's generally some kind of a landscape, some kind of a grid, some kind of a pattern, some kind of a springboard.
And you're looking down a lot of times on your work. It seems as if you're looking down on a landscape rather than looking through a landscape. You're looking down,
some,
like you're in the air.
A bit of an aerial. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that idea.
Terrain.
Uh-huh. And in the spring... No, I'm sorry. In the winter, I taught a new course at Augustana, and it was called Design Sources Joined by a River. And we went to different places around the Quad Cities The idea being that the whole community was our lab, was our art studio. And it was kind of like international study at home. We went to the Figge, we went to the Putnam, we went to the Botanical Gardens. And it was the same idea of trying to get the students to think about where have I been and what have I seen. And we sketched and we took photographs, and then we came back and we used that as resources to do some sculptures, to do some drawings, to do some paintings. So the same way that I work, I think, is just a really good springboard to teach
and
with.
You're taking in all these sources. There's a kind of soup going on inside
soup.
Of you. And you pull things out of it?
Yeah, or? I guess so. Or salad.
Soup for me.
So the reason I say salad, because you can still see the parts.
Oh, right.
I don't know. Maybe you can still see the parts in soup.
No, salad is better for you because you can see the parts and they rest on top. Oh, good. Good. Speaking with Rowan Schussheim Anderson, her work is at tapestryart.com. You can follow along with it. So for this show that you're in at the Figge, you have two pieces. The one on the left that I just love.
Monarchy.
Talk about that.
And that, if anyone does want to look on the website right now, tapestryart.com, if you look under portfolio, then you can find the piece called Monarchy. At any rate, that was inspired by a monarch butterfly. I looked at the monarch butterfly. I looked at the shapes in the butterfly. And it's not really a butterfly when you look at it. But if you look closely, you can see the shapes of how that came about. And that is woven. And then the huge sections of color that are superimposed on the woven background are done with sewing one bead on at a time, beadwork.
That is one bead at a time,
yeah,
those large purple areas?
That was crazy. I actually worked on that piece throughout an entire school year. Every night sewing beads on. That year I did not do six pieces. That year I did one or two.
Gosh.
That piece took a long time. But it got, you know, I wasn't doing it to see how quickly I could do it. I was doing it to see how I could get across what I wanted to get across.
And what did you want to get across?
Well, the blending color, I think of the beads as almost like the pointillists use color, like one point of a brush stroke or a paint stroke. And so the idea of just using beads almost as pointillism and capturing the richness of the organic quality of the butterfly's structure.
It's not so much joy of life, but it's just kind of like the ecstasy of existence is what you're doing.
Like,
look how beautiful this is, and look how gorgeous this is, and look at how magnificent nature is, and look at these purple beads that took me months to do.
Mm-hmm. I love color, so color is huge to me.
Uh-huh.
And fiber and color, working in fiber, it's like you're building things up line by line.
Right.
And each line of color becomes a shape after a while. And now with working with beads, it's like point by point, not just line by line.
Mm.
So it's slow and it's crazy, but it's also very expressive.
Why do you go through so much work?
Bruce, I ask myself that every day. I do. I think to myself, if I weren't an artist, I could read a book all Saturday, or I could sit on a beach all summer. I have no idea. I can't tell you the answer to that.
Why do you work? Why do you make this stuff?
I can't help it. I don't know. It's just there.
Yeah, it's that virus of art. Because
probably,
if you didn't work, what would
I'd
happen to your life?
I'd probably smoke a lot of cigarettes all day long or something.
You wouldn't? Oh, that
I
would
don't
be
know.
The worst.
I'd be hyperactive.
Hyperactive. It gives you something to do. That's what Andy Warhol said.
It's important.
It is. Are you thinking longevity? Or are you thinking in time? Or are you thinking future generations? Are you thinking museums or legacy or anything
like
that?
No, I'm just thinking making art.
Huh.
It's not as big as legacy. It's just keep doing what you love.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, good place to pause. Rowan Schussheim Anderson is with us, marvelous artist, fiber artist, and also professor here at Augustana College. And she's in a show at the Figge up until September 7th called Innovators and Legends. That's on the fourth floor, and Local Threads, it's on the third floor.
That's the one that I'm in.
Yeah, you're in that way. It could be on the third or fourth floor. But it's a two-floor show. It's just a terrific show. And your website, tapestryart.com. Time for a short break. Let's take one now, and we'll be right back after this gallery guide.
on exhibit around the WVIK listening area at the Quad City Botanical Center on 4th Avenue in Rock Island through the end of August. Paintings by Laura Goldman Weinberg and David Gregory. Hours are Monday through Saturday from 10 to 5, Sunday from noon to 5. At the Renee Gray Gallery at 101 South Cody Road in LeClaire through the end of August, Alchemy. Hours are 11 to 5, Monday through Saturday. At Roz Talks at 2108 3rd Avenue in Rock Island on continuing exhibit, Object Permanence. Works by 20 local artists. Hours are 11 to 1 a.m., Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. At the Buchanan Center for the Arts on the Square in Monmouth through August 28th, D3 and F, works by Julie, Bill, and Amy Drabelbis, plus Ben Fairweather, hours 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, Saturdays 10 to 2. At the Muscatine Art Center at 1314 Mulberry Avenue in Muscatine through the end of August, wood carvings by Norman Bunn. Through January 25th, Railroads of Muscatine County, hours are Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 5, Thursday evenings from 7 to 9, Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 5. At the Dubuque Museum of Art at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque, through September 1st, Edward S. Curtis and Thomas Moran, the Grant Wood Gallery, also on continuing exhibit, hours are Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10 to 5, Thursdays 10 to 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays 1 to 4. At the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue in Cedar Rapids through September 7th, Carl Van Vechten, photographer to the stars. Through November 2nd, Marvin Cohn on My Mind, The Ceramics of Dean Schwartz. And on continuing exhibit, Art in Roman Life, Grant Wood in Focus, and Maurizio Lazansky, Master Printmaker. Hours are Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., Thursdays 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., Sundays noon to 4. And that's a look at current exhibits around the WVIK listening area.
And we're back on Art Talks. If you've just joined us, this program and many, many previous programs going back about 2 years are available at our website, WVIK.org. Click on the schedule button at the top of the page. Scroll down to Thursday night at 7 p.m. for Art Talks. Click on the Art Talks, and they will appear by name and date and a brief description of the artist. And Rowan will probably call you fiber artist and professor.
Okay, that works for me.
That works for you, too. So the local threads and the innovators and legends, talk about
okay.
The show.
Well, Innovators and Legends is a traveling exhibit that was curated, and Tim Schiffer, the director of the Figge, had an opportunity to bring that to the Figge, and he talked to me about it, and I agree that it was really a very interesting exhibit. And he had the idea to also have a local component. So we came up with some local and regional artists of a fairly equal caliber to the traveling exhibit. And the traveling exhibit, it has nationally known artists, some of the very early pioneers of the fiber art movement, if you will. The exhibit's unique in that the artists are using very broad range of materials, a broad range of methods and techniques. There's everything from traditional textiles to a piece where you look at that and go, how is that fiber? So that show is really makes you question, and there's some fun pieces in it. There's some three-dimensional, a lot of two-dimensional. It's worth seeing. I mean, even if it weren't as innovative it is, we don't get that many fiber exhibits in our area. So for that reason alone, it's worth seeing. And then the local threads has artists from Iowa City and the Quad Cities and some other nearby areas and regions. And it has some interesting fiber sculpture, paper, handmade paper by Mary Merkel Hess from Iowa City. She's actually a nationally known artist. some quilts. One quilt is by a woman who's also a social worker, so she's kind of making a social statement in her work. But basically the idea is that there's a real range, again, of concepts being explored, of methods, of just an incredible variety of materials.
Mm-hmm. Everything from photographic to mm-hmm. To there's a large piece of muslin, I think, that's been covered with graphite and then little holes punched out of it and then hung very industrially from the top, and then a light shining through it to give that mist back. What do you make of that piece? What is that piece? I mean, everything has some meaning to it.
I think that that piece is exploring the surface. I think it's exploring, as you said, light. There's definitely a structure going on with that piece. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting piece. Mm-hmm. It's not warm and fuzzy. It's mm-hmm. kind of almost a
gong.
Yeah, it has a real presence about it. There's a piece in the lobby the entryway to one of the floors that's a tapestry that's so finely done that the person did that with, we talk about threads per inch when we weave, and that piece has so many threads per inch that he had to spend probably hours doing one square inch.
Mm.
That's just really, it's an amazing
piece. Is that the stand-up
piece
in the lobby?
It is.
Yeah, with the stand around it?
Right.
That was fabulous. And there were faces in there.
Right.
All these forms mm-hmm. are going on.
Right. And Mary Barrow, the woman whose piece is on the poster outside that's mm-hmm. advertising it, it looks like a huge piece, but it's stitched with with embroidery thread. Anyone who's ever sewn before knows how to do embroidery. But yet she gets such expressiveness with that needle and thread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she had a piece right next to it of all the face parts. Yeah, but that
she
little
did.
Face and all those colors. Mm-hmm. And there's another piece of kind of a weaving of film and of car parts and of aluminum going through it.
And
it's
you
like
sort of go, huh?
Industrial
is
weaving?
That, how is that? Textiles, but it is. It's a fibrous.
Using the thing of textiles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were some marvelous, the black dress.
The black dress was great.
Yeah.
Yes, and a friend of mine saw that, and she asked if that's my daughter got married this summer, and she asked, is that the black dress you're wearing to your daughter's wedding? I said, no, not that black dress.
Or when you walk in, there's this fabulous cloak made out of taffeta or watercolored fabric that mm-hmm. was just magnificent. It was like something out of Star Wars. I just mm-hmm. love that piece. Do you know anything about that one? On the third floor, when you walk in the door, it was just standing looking at
you. Yeah, I think that's
you.
Hand-painted, isn't it?
Yeah, it is hand-painted, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's the almost body suits
uh-huh.
upstairs.
Yes.
And those are really fascinating pieces.
They are.
I think people just need to go check this out.
I think they do.
It's a pretty interesting
show. It is
show.
A very interesting show. Mm-hmm. I liked it. And Dawn had some three good pieces,
she
too.
She did. One of them was with tape measures.
Uh-huh. And measuring up.
Measuring up.
Yeah.
That was Dawn.
Wolford Metallo.
From Quad City Arts.
Quad City Arts,
right.
Yes.
She was one of our local thread artists.
Uh-huh. And then the one with the slide dress. With the light coming from the inside, projecting
wonderful
the slides
piece.
Out. How very clever. And she said it was leftover slides that people didn't pick up from years ago.
I love it.
You know, when
back
we
when we had slides.
Yeah, back when we had slides.
Pre-JPEG.
Oh, yeah. It's like, how does this thing work?
Yeah.
Interesting. Terrific show. And were you part in setting it up? Did you call people?
Oh, I talked to Tim Schiffer, the director, about some ideas of some of the people for the local mm-hmm. threads. But he was the curator, not me.
Oh, so, I didn't know he curated it.
Yeah, the local part.
Huh.
I thought if I was going to be in it, I didn't think it was right to curate it.
Well, you know, you can include yourself in one song, you know. Yeah, and your piece was fabulous in it, too. Good. Are you involved in making any books of fiber art?
I haven't really. I like to make little books, but I haven't really made that my art form.
Are you collecting any pictures or any artists and putting it into a book? Are you writing a book on fiber arts? I mean, you have enough experience.
I'm always collecting images, but uh-huh. it's not necessarily to go for a book. I actually have an idea for a book, but I haven't gotten very far with it yet. Because people all over the world make the same coiled basket where you start with some grasses or some kind of a cora and you connect them by coiling the same as powdery as a coiled pot. except for with a coiled pot, the clay sticks to itself. But actually, the very first craft that we know of was basket making. People made baskets before they made pottery by many thousands of years. And so the coiled pot goes way, 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 way back to the basket maker stage of anthropology. At any rate, I've thought about going to different communities in different parts of the world and looking at who makes a coiled basket and why and what material is and what it's used for and who taught you. Did you learn from your mother or your grandmother? Is this an economic commodity now, or is it something like the Navajos use their coiled baskets for wedding baskets? So this is an idea I have that may come to fruition at some point of following the coiled basket, kind of like the silk thread, the trade routes and so on. But I haven't really done it yet. It's just an idea.
Gosh, what a good idea.
It's just an idea. So
I didn't. Are you involved? Yeah, but you're not a basket weaver. I don't think of you.
I know how to make baskets. Like the piece and the figure has little tiny baskets.
They're worse
than
your
piece. And I made them all.
Yeah, the little ones?
Yeah, I made all those baskets.
Well,
I made one a day. But so, yeah, I know how to make coiled baskets. I don't do it by itself, but I make them just for fun in between those big tapestries that we have.
And there was a really nice, colorful coiled basket that was in the show, too.
Beautiful basket in the show.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Right? It is a terrific show. It's like I was so stunned when I saw it, how beautiful it was, and all the different pieces and the wide spectrum.
That's what's really
and
impactful.
I never thought of it as, it's craft. You know, wasn't even considered, and so I won't even bring it up.
That's an old battle, the art versus craft.
Yeah.
But that's a beautiful show, whatever we call it.
Yeah, very good. So a book on coiled.
We'll see.
Baskets.
We'll see. It's a thought. It's more a thought than an actuality.
It's like finding the source of the Mississippi.
There you go.
You're going back and finding that. Well, gosh, Rowan, this is fabulous. How is your teaching going? Has it evolved over the years? Because you're a well-known professor here. Has your teaching style changed? Are you doing the classic talk about it, demonstrate it, and then have them do it?
Or? Yes, but I think things change. Like I told you, that the new course that I just came out with about using the Quad Cities as a resource. Certainly, every time you teach a course, you think about what worked well last time, what didn't work well, what seemed to have the most impact on the students. It's not necessarily whether they liked it or not, but whether they came up with interesting expressions.
And that's always evolving, too. You're always editing and adding new things. And it's almost like Wikipedia, I think.
Yeah, and students are different now. You know, they'll go on Pinterest and they'll look up ideas and they'll come and with a different wealth of that's the good part. The challenging part is that they're used to things being really fast and a quick turnaround time. So something like weaving that takes a long time, you have to sit and sit and sit. That's a little challenging when you're used to things faster in our world today. And like things that take practice to get good at. For example, I teach batik, where we paint with wax. And the wax drips, and you have to practice and practice so the wax does not drip. It's hard to get students to want to practice. They just want to just do the real piece. So that whole time of that whole thing of putting the time in to get good at something, that's something you got to really work at now. Maybe it was always true.
Probably was always true. I remember Bill Evans talking about his students wanting to immediately start improvising. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, you've got to like know your scales and know what works and the whole modal system and all of that. So
before you I had a professor who said, it was a photography course, and he said, first learn how to print your photographs the right way. And then if you want to attach your negatives to your tires and drive across the desert, fine. But first learn how to do it the right way. And I think that still holds true.
I think it does too. Enter to learn how. Final thing before we go. We're coming down to the end, but I know you just got back from Israel for the marriage of your daughter.
Right.
Israel
was a beautiful
Israel
country.
Like, and what was the work like there? Did you visit museums?
I did see some pretty wonderful art. I saw some contemporary art, which is very happy and colorful.
In Israel?
Yes, very bright, a lot of art, a palette that is like the whole rainbow, similar to what I've seen in Brazil, interestingly, to me. I also got to see the new building, the new wing of the Tel Aviv Museum of Art, which is wonderful architecture. And I went to an artist village and saw some traditional work.
An artist village?
Yes. There's a place north of Tel Aviv called Sfat that's a lot of different artists that have their own areas. And I saw some weaving there, too. Weaving some traditional prayer shawls, actually.
Huh.
So it's a very lively place, and the artwork doesn't... It's pretty lively. It's a young art, and a lot of young artists, and coming out with some interesting expression.
Huh. Well received?
I think so, but I'm not really sure. One thing that I got to see while I was there was an exhibit of some young students' work, their BFA, their bachelor's of fine arts equivalent exhibition, and I saw a lot of innovation there. And I saw people using knitting machines that are usually used for industry to make some beautiful wall pieces. And I saw some very innovative uses of textiles.
Interesting. Using a new technique in an old way, or an old technique in a
old technique in a new way, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Which is the symbol of creativity, which is exactly what it,
exactly.
What it is.
And they had a lot of innovation there at that school. It was a school of design and engineering.
How cool that you were able to travel the world and see all these new and beautiful sights and new ideas, that it just must fill your salad source, your unconscious
salad. It's
good
to come home, too, and just have it be mellow here and get to go to the studio and bring it all together.
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about Iowa.
I love it.
So, finally, last question. Rowan, from your experience, what advice do you have for young artists?
Always look and keep your eyes open and find new things. I used to say bring your sketchbook, but at least bring your camera or your phone with your camera on it, and just be a sponge.
Perfect. And then see what happens, where it goes from there. Perfect. Rowan Schatzheim Anderson, marvelous hour. Tapestryart.com, and also the Innovators and Legends local threads at the Figge until September 7th. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bruce. It was good to see you.
You too. Well, that's it for us today on Art Talks. Many thanks to our guests. Many thanks to our audio engineer, that maestro of sound, Dave Garner. As always, I'm Bruce Carter. Until next week, have a great night and a fine tomorrow. See you soon, Laura.
Support for Art Talks comes from the Blue Cat Brew Pub, located in the district of Rock Island, serving food and handcrafted ales and lagers. And from the Bucktown Center for the Arts at 225 East 2nd Street in downtown Davenport, with 16 independent studios and galleries offering original fine art and gift ideas in one location. Information is at bucktownarts.com.